Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I would typically record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach in Arlington, Virginia, just outside of DC. Bad traffic is a good time for brainstorming and brain dumping, but we aren't driving to school anymore because coronavirus has kept all of us on lockdown. So while we're safe in our homes and trying to stay healthy and stay just isolated, we have to figure out ways to change the game in teaching for remote learning and distance learning. So my weekly podcasts, which were recorded in a car, have now turned into daily podcasts, which are recorded here from my house or from my neighborhood while I'm taking a walk or checking the mail or just trying to get teachers engaged with things that can be helpful, whether you teach littles or middles, high school or adult learners. We're all being called to really kind of rethink what the new normal is and build the plane as we fly it. So today I want to talk about what we can learn as educators from video games and spend a little bit of time deep diving into the great work by a really good friend of mine named Greg Toppo. More on that in a second. And spoiler, we get to use F-words. And if you're not excited to hang out and talk about F-words, well, I don't even know what I'm doing. But before we get to that, some housekeeping notes. If you like what you're hearing, you want to like or subscribe or leave a comment on your favorite podcasting app. That's awesome. Like whether it's iTunes or Spotify, it helps other people find this podcast if it has ratings that people like. So thank you. I appreciate that. It means a lot. If you want to keep talking every day, I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. That's M as in Mary, E-E-H-A-N as in Nancy, and EDU as in teaching. Because I love teaching and I want to get better at it. And we're all learning as we go here. So if you've figured out a hack or a thing that fixes or makes it a little bit better, let's talk. Even if it's obvious to you, it could be an eye-opener for somebody else. And this is really helpful for us to stay social, stay connected in a time where we have to stay apart. You really can help change the game together. So there's that. And then I have a website, adrenalinerush.com. It's spelled with an E, like educational ed, adrenaline rush. It's all resources and templates and multimedia and tools and things that you can use for your classroom. Use them, borrow them, edit them, steal them. I push everything out open source. I hate it when people waste my time or waste my money as a teacher because we don't make much of either of those things. It's time is a premium and money is even more harder to come by. So as the parents that are at home now realizing just how hard teachers work, anything I can do to make it a little bit easier, that's what I want to do. So let's talk. All right, good deal. That's the end of that story. And I have a book. It's called Adrenaline Rush. It's about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. If that sounds like something you're interested in, well, check it out. It's available on my website, on Amazon, and it has a bunch of resources and strategies, things like we're talking about now, for later when we get back in our classrooms. Because one day, this will be over, and we will be back in our classrooms. But before then, I want to talk about video games. I don't know about you, but I love video games. I was never really great at ball sports and team sports. I love running. I love like cardio. I love marathons. I love working out. But I'm not so good at the hand-eye coordination and like, hey, man, pass me the ball. Maybe because I was smaller in stature, because I'm a skinny kid, or maybe just because I just had different interests. So my lean, even though I love watching pro football, my way that I could be good at sports or good at games was never really on a field. Instead, it was with a controller in my hand. And as a kid, I grew up on Nintendo Entertainment System. You know, as latchkey kids, we grew up on the ability to go home and kind of parent yourself for a little bit. Mama and Dad both had work. And so we came home and we worked by ourselves with video games or, you know, television for 2-3 hours at a clip. You had some Hot Pockets or some Pop-Tarts and you just kind of got yourself into your house, settled in, and you spent 2-3 hours playing The Legend of Zelda or Mario or online games. And then later on in life, when we had, you know, more advanced systems like Nintendo 64, right? Different ways to get yourself engaged with technology, even if you couldn't engage with people. But it did give that social element of inviting friends over and playing a game of Mario Kart or WWF No Mercy or GoldenEye, inviting people in and just sort of blasting each other, playing for hours and hours and hours, having fun, knocking people over, playing Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. And I know that these games will rot your brain and rot your soul and blah, 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 blah. But as I grew up, I found that I'm much better at a lot of things involving hand-eye coordination, involving critical thinking, analytical problem-solving, as a direct result of the time I spent playing video games. I was never a great math student, but I'm really good at analytical thinking and problem-solving, and that's math, just by a different name. When I think about it, what video games did for me as a learner is they're binary, right? If you got it right, you move forward. If you got it wrong, you're stuck. And they make you stay stuck for a really long time. If you ever played like one of the Legend of Zelda video games, the water temples are notoriously hard. Games like Tomb Raider are notoriously tricky because all the things that you need to beat that level are hidden inside of that level. but you just have to find them, and you have to find them in the right order, much like an escape room. And it doesn't let you out of that locked chamber until you get the code exactly right. This is why people develop game walkthroughs and strategy guides and cheat codes, right? So they can help beat the game, because games should be hard, but they should also be just hard enough so that you do feel like every now and again you have the right answers and you can move forward accordingly. So I love, love, love using video games as a springboard for classes. And during this time of distance learning, there are a bunch of things we can learn from video games. Talking about F-words, an awesome writer, researcher, a journalist, his name is Greg Tappo. He worked for the USA Today for a really long time. He then went on to be a managing editor at Inside Higher Education. And Greg was the national K-12 education reporter for USA Today for over a decade. He also was a classroom teacher before his time working for USA Today. So he knows his stuff. But he wrote a great book called The Game Believes in You, How Digital Play Can Make Our Kids Smarter. And I've had the chance to meet Greg on a number of occasions, present with him at conferences, and just sort of get to pick his brain about the great work he's done with this awesome intersection between video games and learning and what we have to learn from video games. And what he said is, and it's really cool, I love it, and he's quite quoting somebody else when he says it in his book, but he says, you know, video games are infinitely patient and infinitely stupid, that if you have the exact right answer, it will move you forward. If not, unlike a teacher, it won't get mad at you to keep asking the same question again and again and again. It will just be there for you when you're ready to give the correct answer. I mean, because video games were designed in the earliest days, right, to steal our quarters, to get us to teach to mastery using classroom language. And what's super, super cool about this idea of this game believing in you is that it designs it as hard on purpose because it kind of wants you to fail. But it only wants you to fail enough so that you can say, darn it, I'm going to try that again because I've learned something from when I failed. Now, this is not in Greg's book. It's in a really cool documentary on Netflix. And if you have some time, now's a lot of time to watch some binge stuff on Netflix. It's about the Atari Corporation. It's actually called Atari Game Over, about the rise and fall of the video game industry from the earliest company who saw it to incredible success and then ultimate failure. And they made a game called E.T., which was so bad, so unplayably bad, that they had to bury a whole bunch of copies of it, like tens of thousands of copies of this game, unplayable video game, which is so glitchy, so buggy, in a landfill in New Mexico. And for the documentary, they actually dig up they excavate it, and they see if they can find this apocryphal buried, you know, games. And sure enough, there are hundreds and hundreds of copies there buried in the desert still to this day. Because the game was so bad, it hurt the reputation of the Atari Corporation, and ultimately, it tanked their business model. People lost faith in the company and stopped investing in them, stopped trying their new games, stopped believing in them. They felt that they were cash grabs, not really out for the player, but only out for the bottom line. And so what the video game industry talks about, and what the documentary talks about, is when they built early video games, the idea of an extra life was a critical new development that was really introduced to the lexicon of the world as a direct result of the video game industry. It turns out they were dropping a bunch of LSD when they were making these early video games. And while they're there, you know, tripping on acid, there's these stoner game designers who are like, whoa, bruh, like, what if you lived your life like as best you could, but then like you got killed or you died, but you like learned why you died and you could come back with like another life and then like do better in your second life because you knew what killed you the first time. And while that sounds super crazy, like a lot of drugs, that's exactly how video games have been designed every day for the past 40 years. You play the game until you die, and then when you die, they give you another life and you have a chance to play again. That's really, really helpful to think about for classroom design, management of behavior through management of expectations. This is going to be hard. It's going to kill you. You're going to die. But don't worry, you're going to get another shot at this. We call that teaching mastery. And in a classroom, if you can build that experience in, well, how much more are your kids going to be willing to give it another shot when they recognize it's not that the teacher is mean. No, it's that this game is hard. And this game is hard on purpose. It's designed to be hard fun. And so in Greg, he's working on a new book, and I had a chance this past summer to see him present at my school. We brought him in as a guest speaker for a number of conferences that we led. In his new book, he's talking about just game design and what he's learning. He's kind of narrowing his message down in a new direction. And he said in his book, he talks about the seven F words. He's narrowed his understanding of how video games and learning work to seven F words. He jokes, you know, with a rip on George Carlin. He says, these are the seven F words you can use in school. And he says what video games do really, really well is they offer failure, feedback, fairness, flow, fantasy, freedom, and fellowship. And I want to recap each of those and then go into more detail about it. Again, failure, feedback, fairness, flow, fantasy, freedom, and fellowship. And very quickly, we can see that a well-designed video game and a well-designed classroom actually have a lot in common. We'll go deeper into each one, but again, just to talk about it, right? Failure. You want to create a classroom where failure is part of the experience, but not end-of-the-year failure, you are a failure, you go home feeling like a failure, but rather, failure is part of the process. You're not first attempt in learning unless reflection evident. Like, we need to fail and build in failure as an everyday part of our classrooms. Talking about feedback, video games are specific precision-engineered feedback loops that offer, and I say it in my book, SAFE experiences, and SAFE can be an acronym too, S-A-F-E, specific, actionable feedback expediently. They're designed to be you fail, you fall, you learn, you do again, right? You get a new life. Talking about fairness, we want our classrooms to be equal so that every child has access to material, whether they're rich or poor, whether they have homes with internet, whether they have two working parents or one working parents or no working parents. We want them to be fair. They want to be inherently fair is not always equal, right? That's always out of Rick Warmly's playbook. And what we can do in our classrooms to make, quote, the game of school be a more leveled playing field. We talk also about the flow state, the Mihai Cheeks and Mihai stuff. The proximal development should always be just a little bit harder than the game is currently playing, so that you're constantly pushing yourselves a little bit out of that zone where you're like, all right, I'm going to stretch myself like a rubber band, just a little bit more than I would feel comfortable. We want to hit that flow state where time both speeds up and slows down. That fantasy element. How much do we want our classroom to feel like an escape from the world outside of the crazy? Dave Burgess writes about that in Teach Like a Pirate. The idea of your schools can either be something that contributes to this soul-killing suckiness, or it could be an escape from that. And that little bit of, you know, that momentum, that little bit of imagination, a little bit of joy and wonder and mystery gets our students immersed in the world of our games. And in a world where the coronavirus is shaking everyone to their core, how much more do we want our classroom to feel like, you know what, this is almost like going to recess. It's a chance to hang out. Not because it's just fun in the games, but because there's an escapist element in there, walking inside of that magic circle. Talk about freedom. All this research from Maria Montessori through John Dewey, you know, through what we need to know today is choice, voice, autonomy, asynchronous, right? Freedom, 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 freedom. Video games have been excellent at giving freedom for a really, really long time. How you choose to play your video game is totally up to you, and that's totally different than the way that I would choose to play mine. But in the end, I don't care whether you did it, went left, went right, went up, went down. The reward for correct answers is you get harder questions, and there's a freedom to how you chose to answer those questions in the first place. It rewards you for being your own person and being, brave and being curious or being sly or being cunning. Whatever it is, video games offer that. And it's, you know, feeling a fellowship, right? The games are social. That's something that our students probably are missing more than anything right now, is the chance to be seen and to see their classmates. They feel like they're missing out. They feel like they don't have that one-on-one support. They feel like they don't have their friends there to work with them and say, you know, win, lose, or draw, I just want to be able to tell people something. I want to be able to, like, look over at my shoulder and see that cute girl or that cute boy or, like, wave hi to my friend or, you know, punch my buddy in the arm or pass a note. Like, part of school is that idea of connecting with one another. And you can pick on, you know, geeks for hanging out on Fortnite or World of Warcraft or Minecraft, but you know what? They're connecting with people online. And in a time where we're being told by the World Health Organization that playing video games is safer than playing soccer and basketball, there's nothing wrong with dialing up a friend and saying, hey, you want to meet up on this online place and we can connect and do things together. As Topo says in his book, he quotes another theorist. He's a game theorist named Jesper Juul. He says, games are hard. Game designers even have a name for it. They call it hard fun. The game isn't fun in spite of its difficulty, but rather it's fun because of it. As Juul says, I dislike failing in games, but I dislike not failing even more. If you play a game and there are very low consequences and there's very high likelihood that you will always pass, it makes the game not fun. You don't want to play it. If every time you went to a casino and pushed a button, you won, you would not go to casinos because the payouts would be very, very small. Everyone would be winning. Everyone gets a trophy. And that doesn't feel really good. We want to raise people in a generation that says, hey, the trophies that you get, you had to earn. And the ones that you get are a bigger size than the person's next to you because the work that you did is inherently more deserving of a higher accolade. We want our students to have that hard fun in our classrooms where it's not just everybody gets an A+ for turning something in, everybody gets a gold star, everybody gets a sticker, but rather, no, the work that you're doing matters. And I want to see that in my classroom. So tapping into the idea of what video games can do, Tapo suggests this time away could be an awesome time to get your students playing video games. And that could relate to your content, to be used to teach stuff like Walden Pond. There's an awesome video game called Walden, which will just walk you through the time of Henry David Thoreau. You can learn about a concept or a story. It's a beautiful, poignant and heartbreaking story. It's called Old Man's Journey, and I think it's like $5 for iOS. But you just play as a wordless video game, and you learn the life of an old man as he kind of walks through these flashbacks of his life. I'm talking about reading Old Man and the Sea or playing Old Man's Journey actually have a lot in common. And I would argue in a time like this, you might be more likely to get kids to give written reflections with thought and nuance and depth and detail on Old Man's Journey more than they would on Old Man and the Sea. Or you can pick a video game that has nothing to do with anything and just ask kids to play it. Hey guys, I want to play Fortnite. I want to see what you can do. And can you make for me a Twitch stream or a Minecraft video where you walk through how you did what you did and how you beat this level or how you would go about beating this level if you had a chance to do it again? You told me for a grade I was allowed to play video games. Are you kidding me? That's awesome. Like, I get graded on how well I can play with Legos online. Yes, please, sign me up. I want to set up systems in my class to make my students encourage and engage. And that works for littles or middles or high school students as well. Like, don't care what you're working on. I want you to be able to read, write, speak, and present. And you can use these things as thin ends of the wedge to then guide students back to, okay, well, how does that relate to this content we've been talking about? If it's a history class, could you maybe build the Parthenon or build the Colosseum in Minecraft? If it's a world language class, can you play Fortnite? Just play Fortnite and then narrate back to me in Spanish what you did. As if you did like a play-by-play version of your gameplay, but it just has to be in the target language. If it's an English class, hey, I want you to play this video game. Can you explain to me the main character's motivation? What about this first chapter of the game bothered you? What about this first mission made you upset, confused? That's awesome. We want our kids to engage and to feel like they're in control. And these 7 Fs that Greg lays out, I'll put a link to his article from USA Today, which actually came out this morning, in today's podcast. They're great, great resources to think about our classes more like a video game designer, always with the user in mind, the player in mind. Creating a good user interface or user experience where the players want to come back and play the next version of our game, the next season of our game, the next patch or the next update of our game. In a time where we're doing missions that are remote, this is exactly what I need to have our students doing, feeling comfortable, feeling safe, feeling supported, and getting the F in before we get the F out. How's that for a pun for the day? All right, that's it. Thank you for tuning in. These podcasts, like I said, every day, they're about 10 to 15 minutes. Sometimes they're a little longer like this one was. I appreciate you tuning in. Thank you for your great feedback. Let's talk on Twitter. Let's keep the conversation going. God bless you. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Thanks again.